I'm reading from a book called Teaching of the Buddha. These are very simple. It's an anthology. You know, just what we were talking about earlier. Let me just do something. Oh, this is from the Dhammapada, one of the earliest teachings of the Buddha. It says, all beings tremble before violence. All fear death, all love life. See yourself and others, then whom can you hurt? What harm can you do? She who seeks happiness, by hurting those who seek happiness, will never find happiness. For your brother is like you. He wants to be happy. Never harm him. And when you leave this life, you too will find happiness. So again, these kinds of teachings are quite wonderful. And most of us would say, well, how wonderful, right? And yet, like we just said earlier, but then how do you take them in the world, right? I mean, right now, the news is very inflamed by what? By what's going on in the Middle East and the violence and the demonstrations and the taking of lives, right? And we see the way of the world, which not, I know it's not, I'm sorry, the way, but the way of the way of politics, the way of the state, is not this way, is it? It's an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Right? They kill one of ours, we'll kill them. It's really no different kind of response that an individual has when they feel they've been hurt or they feel they've been violated, right? The natural response is what? To want to do the same to that person and even more. Can you see? It's a very primitive response and very natural. And whether it's just in us as individuals or whether it's in the, you know, governments and nations, it's the same stuff. That's why, for me, real spirituality, real religion, is that we see the bigger picture. Right? In the smaller picture, they hurt me, I hurt you. Right? That seems fair. Right? Equal everything out. That's small picture. What's the bigger picture? Is what is going to be the effect of this? Remember? In Buddhism, the eradication of suffering comes from looking deeply into the situation and acting skillfully. Right. Obviously, we need to look deeply into what's causing these situations to occur, why people act the way they act. And to think that by killing, you know, I think Gandhi said in relationship to that phrase, an eye for an eye, I think he said, I don't know, was it Gandhi said, an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind. Right? An eye for an eye makes the whole world blind. If we want to stop violence, and I think everybody would say what? Yes, we want to stop violence. As it says here, the Buddha said, all beings tremble before violence, all feel death, all love life. Right? If we want to stop violence, it will never be stopped by violence. Violence can always only be stopped by nonviolence. Hate can only be ended by love, right? How could hatred be ended by hatred? You know, if you don't introduce a new variable, nothing changes. So while we might say the desire to hit back, the desire for revenge is a very primitive kind of human response, if you step back and you go, well, what is this going to produce? Is this going to end the violence that we are so disturbed by? And I think any intelligent person, insightful person would say what? No, it just feeds the violence, right? Because now violence has been done to me, even though you may say, well, you did it first. Well, it's hard to say who did what first. Everybody always thinks they're justified. So, for your brother and sister is just like you. They want to be happy. That means everyone. Everyone in this room, everyone in our life, everyone in our part of the world, everyone in the other parts of the world, everyone in our society, everyone in every society. Everybody wants to be happy. They love their children. They want them to grow up to be healthy, right? And when we understand that, we will be much more willing to understand deeply causation and to act in a way that really reduces the violence that we so abhor. Violence will never do that. How do we know that? Because we have 2,000 years of human history. We have 2,000 years of endless war, of endless revenge, of endless tit for tat. And if violence can produce a world of nonviolence, then we would be living in a, at this time in human history, we would be what? We would be experiencing an incredible nonviolent world, wouldn't we? A very peaceful world. But the reason we're not is because human beings have not mastered individually the simplest of teachings. All beings tremble before violence. For your sister and brother is just like us, just wants to be happy, never harm him or her. Let me just read one more. This is called The Heart. And this is Buddha teaching. He says, friends, I know nothing which is as intractable as an untamed heart. The untamed heart is indeed intractable. Anybody know what intractable means? What? Stubborn? Yeah, kind of stubborn, rigid, unyielding, unbending, uncurable. You know, it's got lots of meaning. That's an intractable heart. So he says, there is nothing so stubborn, unable to be changed, than an untamed heart. That's interesting. And this comes back to, Nikki, this comes back to why Buddhism puts so much stress on mind training. Okay? The untrained heart. And please remember that in Asian societies, heart and mind were the same. We differentiate. But it was really one heart-mind. So the cognitive and the emotions were seen as one, coming from the same place. Friends, I know nothing which is as tractable as a tamed heart. The tamed heart is indeed tractable. Friends, I know nothing which tends toward loss as does an untamed heart. Indeed, the untamed heart tends toward loss. I know nothing which tends toward growth as does a tamed heart. Indeed, the tamed heart tends toward growth. Friends, I know nothing which brings suffering as does an untamed, uncontrolled, unattended, and unrestrained heart. Such a heart brings suffering. Friends, I know nothing which brings joy as does a tamed, controlled, attended, and restrained heart. Such a heart brings joy. Is that clear? So quite simply again, we want to see the utter simplicity of really what it means to be a human being. Don't make it too complex, too complicated. As human beings, we want to be happy. As human beings, we don't want to suffer. Right? Anybody disagree with that? As human beings, We would like everyone we love to be happy, and we would love everyone we love not to suffer. Right? Would everyone agree with that? Yes. Okay. And now, after that, it gets a little sticky in terms of how wide our view is. You know, we might say, well, I'd like all my friends and acquaintances and even my work colleagues, I'd like all them to be happy and not suffer. Right? And then we may extend it even further. People in my neighborhood, people in my town, in my community, in my state, in my country, in my world, right? Depending on how vast is your view, how vast is your wish. So we want everyone, well, let's begin with myself. I want to be happy. I don't want to suffer. So here the Buddha is saying very clearly that if that's the case, then it is our untamed mind, heart-mind, that needs, that is intractable at this point, right? It seems so fixed. Well, people say what? Well, this is just the way I am, right? I'm just a mean, ornery SOB. It's just who I am, right? People talk like that and are quite proud of themselves. Or people say, well, I'm just a kind, sweet, loving person. That's just who I am. I can't get angry. I can't be assertive. That's too hard. That's not who I am. But again, when we look more deeply, we realize that so much of who and what we are is just created by causes and conditions. The way we've been raised, our personality, the storyline, the reinforcement, that actually this mind and heart are much more conducive to cure, to change, than we even imagine. So we need to tame this mind. Right? Now, taming is a good word. I like it. Because many of us have tamed, when we think about taming, we usually think about what? Animals, right? Right? Lions, right? Now, when you tame your dog, right, you don't want to repress it, do you? You don't want to destroy its character. You don't want to destroy its life. But you want to tame it so you and it can kind of get along together. You know what I'm saying? You want to tame those behaviors of your animal that make it unlivable, right? So you want to tame, let's say, its bowel and bladder function, right? For obvious reasons, you want to tame that. And there may be other things you want to tame, you know, like biting people. You might want to tame your dog, right? You might want to tame no jumping on the furniture, right? You might want to tame them so when you walk with them on their leash, they walk along with you and aren't always yanking. So you want to tame your animal so you can have a what? An enjoyable relationship. You want to tame your pet enough that they're responsive to you, right? But you don't want to beat it down, do you? You don't want it cowering, and you don't want it just to be like an immovable object. You enjoy your animal's personality, don't you? And you enjoy a lot of its spontaneity. You just don't, there are certain behaviors that need to be tamed, right? So this is the operant word. There are aspects of our heart-mind that need to be tamed. Because left to their own devices, they get us in trouble, right? They cause us to be unhappy. They cause us to create unhappiness or suffering for others. It's those aspects of the mind that need to be tamed. You know, many people these days, they suffer from stress disorders and they suffer from sleep disorders, right? All kinds of significant even disease-producing, but in the short run, mentally uncomfortable that are all mind created. Right? I mean, many people have trouble falling asleep at night. Because why? Because they have an untamed mind that just keeps going, right? Or wakes them up. Right? I mean, sleep disorders is normal, unfortunately, in our society. Right? Stress disorders are normal. Oh, I have a stress disorder. Well, so do I. You know, doesn't everybody? No, I'm not minimizing the suffering of that. I'm just acknowledging that we accept as normal these days diseases that are clearly mind created. And that we are looking for medication type interventions when there is a technology of mindfulness, of meditation, that is thousands of years old, that teaches us very directly how to how to tame the mind, right? And doesn't have a whole list of side effects. Next time you get a medication from your physician, notice the 4-page tiny print piece of paper that, you know, next time you pick up your medication from the pharmacist, look very carefully at that piece of paper. They're letting you know what? While this medication does have positive effects, it also has the potential for lots of side effects. Right. And that's just from one medication. When you're taking multiple medication, you have multiple, right? The wonderful thing about these traditions of self-care, whether it's a yoga tradition of learning how to take care of the body, whether it's a meditative mindfulness of how to take care of the mind, whether these kind of teachings about acceptance and understanding and all that, which have to deal with kind of an emotional self-management, all these issues that are so so affecting, depression, anxiety, lots of kind of mental disorders, stress disorders, etc., are all, to a certain degree, can be beneficially intervened and helped with through these practices and teachings that deal with taming. You know, we need to tame our what? There's so many things about that we got to tame. Many of us need to tame what? Our impulsivity. Right? Eating disorders. Shopping disorders. Right? I mean, you know, if you look at so many of these disorders, these impulse control disorders, you know, the abuse of substances, etc., you know, long before they become addictive, has to do with what? An untamed mind. A human being that does not know their mind and does not have the capacity of knowing how to tame their mind, right? How many people here have a dog? How many people have a dog that when they tell their dog to sit, it sits? Tamed, right? Right? You know? Down dog, right? Get down. No biting. I mean, all these simple things. You know, we say to our dogs and we expect them to be able to do it. But heaven forbid we should say to our own mind, down. Sit. Don't open the fridge. You know? People go, oh, I can't, you know, they have like this uncontrollable thing inside them. You know, I don't know, this thing just takes me over. And before I know it, you know, the ice cream is all gone. But I expect my dog, to when I tell it to sit. Now, am I missing something? That we expect more from animals than we do from ourselves. And that we believe that our own mind cannot be tamed. Again, this is not you can't ever eat, right? You can't ever indulge yourself a little bit. But we're talking about all the ways that we do it that is harmful. That's what we're talking about. That is harmful to body and mind. Are you sticking up for not taming? Dementia? Well, I don't know about that. You know, I don't know about, you know, I mean, there's, the questions of dementia and Alzheimer's have to do with, really organic processes of the mind, which may have as much to do that we're living longer than I don't know how much is known. Maybe there's some physicians here who know. But, you know, it's interesting. My father has had Alzheimer's. He's dead now. We come back to acceptance. I mean, one of the things I noticed with him as his Alzheimer's began and developed, and as he realized that he was no longer who he was or could no longer do the things, there was lots of anger, which you see in lots of Alzheimer's, lots of anger, as well as... So that's the point of view of how they deal with it. But also, you know, one of the things with dementia and Alzheimer's is loss of memory, right? And one of the interesting things about loss of memory, of course, and again, I remember my father was really, he was angered by that, but he was also very scared by it, right? So it was a lot of anxiety because he'd go, I can't even remember what I can't remember what I ate 5 minutes ago. Or he'd be reading something, and I can't even remember what I read 5 minutes ago. Right? And that would be very frustrating to him. Or he couldn't remember who he was, all the things he had done in his life and his story. You know, the interesting thing, when he would get frustrated, I'd say, Dad, you know, I'd say, you know all those people that come to me that I teach meditation to and how to learn the present moment? You're already there. And you didn't have to do anything. You know, just relax. It's okay. You know, it's okay if you don't remember what you had for breakfast. You had breakfast. You know, so what? You know, you don't have to remember, your whole life story. You know, just be here. Everything's good. And it was interesting that I really found that the practices of Dharma and the practices of mindfulness were very beneficial to him, to help him just accept, again, that this is the way it is. And I'd say, as a therapist, I said, people are paying me good money to learn how not to remember the painful things that have happened in their past. You're getting it for free. I mean, it's like, you know, I would joke with him this way, but there was a certain truth to it. Again, I'm not recommending dementia and Alzheimer's a spiritual path. but I'm saying it could very well be that how people deal with these things, right, can have a lot to do with how they go through this process. And we know that a lot of people with dementia and Alzheimer's go through it with a lot of depression and sadness and disappointment and anger and frustration and a lot of disorientation because they can't accept the reality that all they have now is the present, which is very interesting. I mean, again, I don't know where my path is going to be, whether my path will involve dementia and Alzheimer's, so I'll report back if I ever get there, how it is. It may not be as bad as it's cracked up to be. I don't know. You know, I don't know. I mean, I know at the end stages of dementia and Alzheimer's, it is quite terrible. But in the earlier stages, it could be very freeing in a kind of paradoxical way.